Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamong.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you a couple days after the thrilling comeback victory over Duke and a couple days before Notre Dame's next road game against an undefeated and top 25 ranked team, Louisville. I am one of your hosts, Frank Vitovich, joined as always by my co-host, the president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club and video analyst over at Irish Sports Daily, Mr. Greg Flamong. Greg, how we doing midweek, you know, coming down off of Duke and getting ready for Louisville? How we feeling?
Feeling fine, Frank, you know.
Yeah.
Just feeling all right, you know. Nice to get the win.
Yeah, that was...
way that was just heart-wrenching, as stressful as it can be. But it's nice, you know. It's so much better than the sadness we felt the week before. So,
yes, it was nice. It did. There was a feeling when Duke took the lead of like, oh man, this is getting low. Because we talked about it in the preview pod last week of you lose to Duke and things can get off the rails for the entire season. And it felt like things were just slipping away. Opportunities were slipping away for the offense. The defense played so good. I mean, they played great the entire game, you know, even with, you know, the last couple drives from Duke where they scored. But it was like, we're going to waste this defensive effort. And then thankfully, Notre Dame put that drive together and did pull out the win, because now everything is still, theoretically, everything is still on the table for Notre Dame, you know, this season. All of their goals are still attainable. You know, at this point, Notre Dame's ranked 10. You got a top 25, you know, barely top 25 team that you're facing, but another top 25 team. And then you got the big one, you know, next week against USC. But, you know, we're not going to talk about that one yet because there's a lot to get through before, you know, Notre Dame can really start to think about, you know, about USC. But maybe let's start and let's say, where were you at? You know, two and a half, three minutes to go in that game where Notre Dame was down. At that point, we're down one, you know, with Duke, the ball in their hands after, you know, Notre Dame's offense couldn't do anything on that second to last drive. How were you, what were you feeling at that point?
I was terrified.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to, if they get it the first down, right, they're gonna win game.
Yeah,
I mean, they're just gonna win. And not just that, but you know, at Notre Dame, they couldn't do anything. It's like you're sitting there and you're thinking, what are they good at? Like, what can that, like on offense? Like, what are they good at? They can't run. You can't throw. I mean, it's just like, are they just gonna throw to Mitchell Evans like on every play? So it was dire, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was really not good.
No.
But then, you know, they pulled it out in a way that college football happens, right? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-mm. You know,
run for a first down on fourth and 16, you run for 18 yards. And then, like, you're trying to run out the – like, they're trying to set up a field goal, and Audric Estime runs for a touchdown, you know? And yeah. It's just – I mean, that's so bad. Like, if I was a Duke fan, I'd be losing my mind. Like, I would have lost my mind.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because you drop eight, and so you figure, I mean, okay –
it wasn't a whole lot different than what we experienced against Ohio State.
Well, it's actually worse because, like, okay, Notre Dame rushed three. And I don't like Duke rushing three in that spot because, like, they couldn't block Duke really. And it's like, even if there is a one-on-one matchup with a Notre Dame wide receiver, does Duke feel like, oh, yeah, like, Rico Flores is definitely going to make this play. Tobias Merriweather is definitely making this play, right? Like, right. No. Like, you have to like any of your DBs in one-on-one matchups. Even just a little bit of heat probably gets the job done. But they drop eight. But, like, when Notre Dame dropped eight, they just threw it to some guy and they completed the pass. Like, Duke covered. There's no one open. And the last thing you think is, like, oh, when we have eight and we all have all these people, like, looking at the quarterback, someone's going to be able to rally. Like, quarterback scramble on fourth and 16 with eight dropping is, like, not even a consideration.
Yeah.
So the fact that he was able to is just kind of a disaster. And then Notre Dame basically just, I don't want to say they're settling for a 47-yard field goal because you figure maybe we'll get a couple yards on this run play. But, it's not good. So they run it and they run for touchdown. Can't have that. Yeah. So,
well, I mean, and also like with that, like, I know that's what, you know, kind of the interpretation of like, even like the video that Notre Dame released, that was pretty awesome. Showing that final drive was like, oh my God, Freeman was just going to settle for a 47-yard field goal. And it's like, no, like his exact quote was like, run it. We still have a timeout. Like, The intent there could have been like, run it, get us in the middle of the field, and then we could take a shot. You know what I mean? Like, but don't like, let's not take shots, you know, all three, at that point you'd already spiked it. So, it was second down. So you couldn't take, you couldn't just, chuck it, both times and then be on a bad hash for a field goal kicker who is not in any shape. To take anything for granted right now. So, it would have been interesting to see what would happen if Estime did just get like 2 yards there, and what would they have done on what it would have been third and eight? I mean, I doubt they would have played for, just a run there. Cause
they would have run the clock down and called timeout.
Yeah.
That's what they would have done.
You think that if that play got stuffed for 2 yards, they wouldn't have run another, they would have just run it down and
100% chance they don't run another play.
Really? Okay. I don't know. That would be.
There's 30 seconds left.
Yeah. You could take a shot though. You could throw the ball.
They would not. Cause then if he gets sacked or there's a holding.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you're on the 38 now. And it's like, you're playing for the field goal, you can't risk a penalty. You can't risk lost yardage. Already decided we're not pushing the ball. So
the yardage doesn't really matter right now with
I know, but what, like, I'm saying is, like,
it could have been a 68 yarder and he'd have the leg.
It doesn't matter, but like, you don't want it to be like a 28 yarder. Like, you don't even have to think about distance. If he's on the 38 and it's a 55 yarder, you do have to consider distance on that, right? Like, that's just math. Like, the further back you go, the less accurate you're going to be.
Yeah. Well, luckily, we're talking hypotheticals here, and Estime squirted through that line and went in for the touchdown. Because, man, it would have been a rough. It would have just been like, it would have been one of those weeks where I maybe don't even write for the site. Because I would just be like, you know what? I don't want to deal with – I don't want to read what everybody else is saying. Like, it would have been one of those weeks where it's just like, it would have been the indictment of, you know, Marcus Freeman's tenure, and there would have been all those posts and all those articles, and, you know, there would have been the "Is Freeman the right guy for the job?" articles from, you know, from the clickbait sites and things like that. And it would have just been a terrible week. Just like in general, covering or even following Notre Dame football. So thankfully, Estime scored there, because there's enough other sports distractions right now that I would have been okay. But if you don't have those other sports distractions, like think about like a poor Notre Dame / Chicago Bear, Chicago Cubs fan, like right now. Can you imagine what their week would have been like if, and I think actually our buddy at the Exit 77 podcast, Drew Brennan, might fall into that category. So sorry, Drew, if that opens up any wounds of Chicago sports. But it's like, it's kind of, there's a lot of Notre Dame fans that do. And it's like, man, if you didn't have like another distraction and Notre Dame lost that game, it would have just been like a horrific, horrific week. Which also, shout out Drew, I did meet Drew tailgating at the Ohio State game a couple weeks ago. Hooked up with a couple great beers, got to chat with him a little bit. So check out his podcast, everybody, if you haven't already. But I don't even want to think about what this week would have been like. And instead, it's like we got Notre Dame still in the top 10. Like I said, everything in front of them. I got, you know, it's playoff baseball time for those of us who have a team, you know, in the playoffs. NFL is going. It's not a bad week sports wise for me, Greg. I got the Phillies won last night. We're recording right before the start of Phillies Marlins game 2. My Eagles are undefeated. They haven't looked the best, but they're still undefeated, so I'm gonna take it. Notre Dame is 5-1. Like I said, with a chance this weekend to put a little resume piece on, even if I don't think Louisville is that good. They're going to come in ranked, and then we got the big one next weekend. So it is like this week in particular in the fall, when you have a baseball team as well that is pretty good, like it is like it's one of the best weeks. And like I went to my neighbor's house last night watching the game, and his, you know, he's got a little setup in his garage. We're just sitting there drinking beers till like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday watching baseball. I was like, this is a glorious time of year. And we got more football to watch this weekend. So I don't know. You're not into the baseball that much, correct?
No, I didn't know the playoffs were starting.
Yeah. That's what made me think that when you responded to me the other night, like you're watching, there's baseball.
I honestly didn't. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, I don't have time for it. It's mostly a time issue.
I can see that. Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, like when I'm not working and I'm not like recording pods or whatever, then I'm like watching the game and doing cut-ups of the game and doing clips and stuff. So that's where my free time goes. So like, I don't have a ton of time to like be watching baseball or knowing what's going on. But then when you said, I was like, yeah, I guess it's October. I guess they should be playing in the playoffs now.
Yeah. I just wish it was a little cooler here. It's hot on the East Coast today, man. I just walked right before we started potting. I went to get an iced coffee, and by the time I got back, I was super sweaty. It's like 80 some degrees here today. Like, I want fall weather. That's my only qualm last night, was I couldn't be outside like in a hoodie watching the game. That would just be ideal. It was hot it was warm at the Notre Dame game, Ohio State game a couple weeks ago too. I was like, man, it was high 70s. I'm like, I'm ready for the fall weather, which. I know I say that now, and then in a couple of weeks it's going to be cold and my heat's going to be on and I'm going to be annoyed at my heating bills. But until then. So what were your thoughts in general, though, on the offense on Saturday night? Because I think as great as that game, the ending was, there was a lot in that game that is like, it's tough to discern how much of it is concerning long term versus how much of it can we just chalk up to Notre Dame had three healthy receivers that they trusted, and they only really played three wide receivers that they had. I think, if I'm not mistaken, a fourth receiver did get on the field. Who did I look out and remember seeing and being like, oh, they're on the field? I'm going to look now.
Who would that be? I don't know who that would even be.
I thought Let me see. It was somebody that I was only on for like a play or two. Maybe it was. So Sherwood got out there for one snap. Or maybe they split somebody wide that I was like, oh, they're out there. Because, yeah, looking at the snap counts. Man, Merriweather 63, Flores 59, Tyree 43. So, yeah. So how much of it can we chalk up to that situation versus, like, how much of it should we be concerned? Like, why did Notre Dame not have a better plan?
Well, I think I think that if like, you know, Thomas and Greathouse are playing, like, I think the passing game looks better.
Well,
certainly. Yeah, I just think that's true. But generally, like, they had everyone they wanted for Ohio State. I just think the way that they are playing is we have six games now, you know, like, their passing concepts are their passing concepts for the most part, I think, at this point. And I just don't think that it's really – I mean, their efficiency – it's like I tweeted it, you know, and people got mad. Like, I'm really having, like, a hard time on Twitter this year about, like people think that I'm tweeting things meaning something. But, like when I tweeted, like, Notre Dame runs the ball a lot, and they don't run – they don't go very fast. So, like, they're not going to have a lot of possessions if they're moving the ball well. Right. If they're not moving the ball well, you can have a lot more possessions that way, you know, because you're giving up the ball. And Notre Dame's defense is getting teams off the field, too. You can get more possessions that way. But they're not running a lot of plays, and they're not playing very fast. So, like, you better be efficient, you know, because you're not going to have a lot of opportunities. And I think people are like, thinking that it's like a criticism, and it's not a criticism. It's an observation, you know, like that they're playing the way that they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're not going to push the ball, and if they're not going to put pressure on like the defense in the back with the way that their passing game is, then it can look like this. It can look like that. And it can look like that against Ohio State, and look like that against Duke. And I'll be interested to see this week whether it looks like that against a lesser defense as well, because it's like, you know, it's been fine, obviously, against Central Michigan, who's terrible, like maybe the worst defense, one of the worst defenses in FBS. You know, it looked obviously against Tennessee State, obviously it's Navy, who's not good. And against, you know, NC State, like, it looked great with that play action stuff. But we didn't see any of that against in the last 2 weeks. So I just kind of think, I don't know if it's alarming. It just kind of, like, for me, there's a realization that what everybody thought could be with Sam Hartman and, like, going 10 and spreading them out and him just standing back there and dealing, like, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, it doesn't seem like it.
I don't think it's going to happen this year. So, I think we need to understand, like, it's going to be like 2020 in terms of the offense.
Yeah.
Now, I do think that the way is that Sam Hartman's a better thrower than Ian Book is.
Yeah.
So that there's more that they can do there, I think. But I just don't think it's going to look like, oh, you know, it's going to be open and we're going to be throwing a lot. And it's going to be like downfield passing and like dangerous chunk plays. And that's what I just don't think it's going to be there. Unfortunately, is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, we would have seen it by now, right? It's like, you're not keeping things, you know, in the playbook, you know, for anybody else on this schedule at this point, right? It's not like, I mean, we've already seen Ohio State. We've seen Duke, who it's kind of shocking to say it that way, but like, those are probably the best two defenses we're seeing all year. And so you're not saving. I don't think you're saving anything for USC because their defense, like, is just bad. Like, I don't think you have to save anything for them. Like, you could show them what you're going to do, and I think they still might actually have a hard time stopping it. Because for as great as their offense is, their defense is almost equally as bad. So it's like, you're not saving it for that. Clemson is not, you know, the juggernaut that you're like, well, you know, and it's like, you already lost a game. So it's like, your margin for error is now zero if you actually want to go to the playoffs. So I think the thing that gets me with some of this still is like, I can't understand how there is not there has not been more plays designed for Chris Tyree. Because if they trust him so little, right? If they're just like, well, you know, he's there, and he's the best we got in this spot, so we're gonna play him. If they trusted him so little at that, like, why would they? Why did they make the move to? I mean, I guess you make the move to receiver permanent because like of the depth you have, you know, at running back. But it's like you know what you have in him, you know what he's good at, and we're not seeing anything super creative like designed, you know, either for him or by using him really as a decoy, right? Like it does. Like anytime you see some motion from the wide receivers, at least against Duke, it felt like the only time you really saw any receiver in motion, it was Flores. Right. Yeah. I don't think I'm remembering that wrong. And it's like, I can't believe we haven't even seen like, there's some sort of like, again, jet sweeps to Chris Tyree. It's like, we know how fast he is. We've seen him, you know, perform, you know, when he gets the ball in space, and it's like, they're not really drawing a whole lot up for him. And in a game like that, like they knew, you know, they knew they weren't going to have Thomas the way that Freeman talked about Thomas last Monday, it was like, I had already chalked it up. I'm like, I think Jaden Thomas is going to miss at least two games the way Freeman is talking about him being questionable slash doubtful.
Yeah.
It's like when he says that, it's like, you know, does Jaden Thomas still have a foot? Like, that's my thought is like, how bad is this injury? Cause he that's, and it's fine. Like that's what Freeman should do. He shouldn't give any real injury information away, but it's like, all right, you knew you weren't going to have him. And then what were the reports that like that Greathouse's injury happened? What, like Thursday? And I get like it's too late probably. If it happened in practice Thursday, it's probably too late.
It was prior to Thursday.
Prior to Thursday. So you had an opportunity there to know like, okay, he's going to, you know, he's not going to play. Right? Like you'd kind of, like, yeah. I know that he warmed up and he tried, but it's like when we, I don't know, anytime like there's a foot injury and we hear like, oh, they might be back in a couple weeks. I think you and I have talked about this on the pod. It's like a foot injury is never a couple week injury, like especially at certain positions. And it always turns in. It was like when they rushed Kevin Austin back. It's like, what was that? 2020. Right. Where it's like he had the foot injury in camp and they're talking about him playing. And then he came back in like late September and then was gone. And we were like, they should have never done that. But it's like the same thing with like a hamstring. If you suffer a hamstring injury, it's like on a Wednesday or Thursday or whenever it was, it's like, you're not going to play that weekend, especially at receiver. Cause it's like, that's just not smart to test it. So they had time to put something in and it almost felt like they were like, you know what? We're going to trust the defense. We're going to trust the offensive line. And we're just rolling out like our week one fall camp base offense. And we're going to hope it's enough to get the win. And you know, get healthy and then go from there. That's kind of what it felt like. And it's like, I would have liked to see more creativity. Like, I think the Duke's second touchdown was like a prime example. I think Jamie over on ISD actually wrote this in one of his posts of like, he schemed somebody open. Like, yeah. What was the Duke offensive coordinator? Now I can't remember. What was his name? Kevin Johns?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, schemed open that receiver, got Thomas Harper confused, and boom, you know, it brought up some wounds because it reminded me a hell of a lot of the two wide open touchdowns that the Kansas City Chiefs had in the Super Bowl against the Eagles, where they ran some motion, got a corner confused, and then ended up having a receiver wide open in the flat for a touchdown. It's like we didn't see anything like that from Notre Dame really, and that's the part
we did not.
That's the part that I'm like, is it not there? Do they not trust it? And it's like, it's really, to me, it's like six games into Jared Parker. I think in a game like that, it's a little chicken and, you know, the chicken and the egg almost of like, ah, yeah, you're down, but it's like, you could have tried something instead of just like kind of running a very base vanilla offense. Like, I actually love the fact that they came out. It's like they came out, they fired that pass to Evans, and then they took the deep shot to, you know, to Merriweather. And it's like, yeah, an inch or two, you know, off of like that being it was like just a little bit, right? Like, I mean, Merriweather still could have caught it, but it was like, you watch the replay. It's like, he is fully stretched out and it's like off his fingertips. It wasn't like an easy catch, right? But right. still, it's like they took the shot and then it was like, well, that didn't work. Let's just run it up the middle. Like that's kind of how it felt. And that's where I was getting so frustrated watching it. I'm like, can we please try something? Right? Try some play action. Play actions. And I get like at this point too, I think you mentioned maybe last week, like Hartman just must not be comfortable in like a traditional play action given, you know, the 5 years he spent in Wake Forest's offense. Because he was 2 of 7 on play action on Saturday night, which is not great. Those aren't good numbers. those are not, you know, what you would expect. So, but yeah, I think that was my biggest kind of takeaway offensively, at least, is just like, I don't know what this team, well, I mean, I guess we kind of know what they have. But it was disappointing that it wasn't, that Parker wasn't able to cook something up, you know, whatever.
Yeah. He had, he did throw the one screen to Tyree.
Yeah.
And they've run that before. They did have one play where you remember the post that he threw to Flores that was over, he overthrew it.
Yeah.
So that was, I actually really liked that play because they put, I haven't seen the all 22. I was actually DMing with someone about this. We're trying to find the all 22 of this because they basically Tyree runs an over route, which is basically kind of like a deep drag. Mm-hmm. And so they're putting the safety in a bad position to where it's like, if he doesn't take the over route, then the post will be there over the top. If he can beat the corner, who's going to be an outside leverage. Like they're putting the safety in a bind basically. And so it's not like, and that was also a play action. No, it was like a really, they're not selling these play actions very hard. Right. Yeah. Which, you know, whatever.
That could be part of the process for him too.
Right. Like the point is I really like the route concept. It's like, mm-hmm. you're putting the defender in a bad position to where it's like, look, man, you just have to have a couple wide receivers out there who can get out there and run. They don't need to be, great route runners to be able to win one-on-one. Like you're putting the defense in a bad situation. And he overthrew the ball, which is a bummer. And I also wonder if Tyree was actually the better option there. But the point is, it's like, I don't think we see enough of that stuff to where it's like you're putting the defense in a bad situation. And I don't know what it is with their pre-snap stuff. If they can identify zone and get out of a man beater when they're going to play zone, or get out of a zone beater when they're in man. Cause I just feel like there's so many times where it's like the 4th-and-2 play, where Hartman scrambles for it. Like they're in man and literally Notre Dame just has 5 guys like running and turning around at like 5 yards. And it's like, well, if they're in man, that's never going to win. You know, you're not going to win on that. Right. So don't run that play. Like you have to run something else. You have to run a man beater. It's a zone beater. And then there's other times when they're down by in the red zone after the Xavier Watts pick, and they're sitting in zone, and Notre Dame's running a bunch of crossers. It's like, well, it's not going to work against zone. Like they're just sitting there waiting for them to cross. Like no one's chasing across the field, and you got a bunch of crossers in the back, and the defenders are just passing them off to each other. And it's like, well, that's not going to work either. So now you're in a play that just has no chance against this defense. And that happens a lot. And so that's the kind of thing that needs to change, you know. And so when I talk about, like, you got to take better advantage of your skill guys and your explosive guys, and people are like, well, you just want to throw the ball more. It's like, I don't care. Like, they could run the ball. Like, and I said it on the thing. Like, they can run the ball the exact same amount of times. I don't care about that. It's just that when you throw, you need to be aggressive.
Right.
You need to really go for it. It's like have you seen Rounders?
Yes.
I'm just saying. I'm just.
That's a classic.
The baseline. So you know how Mike is talking to his professor, and mm-hmm. his professor is kind of talking to him about poker strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he says, "Look, you got to be tight. Your game is tight. But when you go in, you got to go in there raising. Like you need to be very aggressive, right?" Mm-hmm. So, like, to me, if Notre Dame is going to be like a power running team, then that's fine. Be a power running team and run the ball 40 times, whatever. But when you throw, then you got to be aggressive. Like, you got to go for it. You got to go after them, because you can't let them be a team that's like coming up on the run, and then also doesn't have to worry about it going over their head.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that. And so if they're not going to have that, well, then everyone's just sitting there and everything is condensed within 20 yards. And so you got to go for it. And so that's kind of where I'm at with the offense and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if anything changes with getting some receivers back this week, you know, for Louisville. But to your point, we're six games in, and what we're seeing is probably what we're getting. So still six games left, you know, to see, you know, new wrinkles in the offense, you know, week to week. But hopefully getting Thomas and Greathouse, which I know Freeman said on Monday they're expecting him back. We'll see. I personally am still skeptical, like I said, because there's zero reason for Freeman to give any sort of, accurate injury report. And if I was Freeman, I'd be like, yeah, they're probably going to play, you know, so Louisville prepares for all of those wide receivers as opposed to, you know, preparing a defense like Duke ran. Like Duke was, it was pretty clear. Duke was like, we are stacking this box and run it. Go for it. See what you can do. And Notre Dame didn't do a whole lot, which I think was frustrating about it, too, is like Duke did, for the most part, a better job stopping the run than Ohio State did. And Estime ended up getting more carries against Duke than he did against Ohio State. So that was upsetting, which I think I said in my preview article. I was like, It felt like a game for Estime, but I was like, I almost don't want him to get more carries because it's just going to frustrate me all over again about how few that he got against Ohio State. So, for all of the frustrating parts of the offense, I mean, the defense was, you know, it was the exact opposite. The Notre Dame defense, and hats off to Al Golden this year, because I think, you know, last year's defense was not necessarily bad. It just wasn't great. And we are just seeing a much, much better defense, you know, this year in like all aspects. And I mean, specifically, like, think about how bad Notre Dame's red zone red zone defense was a year ago. I mean, it got to the point by the end of the year where it was like, if opponent got inside the red zone, I was just like, they're going to score. And they're going to score a touchdown because it was like almost historically bad for Notre Dame. And this year it is the exact opposite. And it came through again, you know, bless you college kickers, that Duke missed that one chip shot there at the end of the first end of the first half after, you know, Notre Dame had a nice stop at the, you know, at the goal line, but they are now, they've only given up scores on 11 of 20 trips into the red zone. That's insane. And that's overall. That's not like touchdown percentage. That is 9 trips to the end zone already this year have resulted in 0 points for Notre Dame's opponents. Phenomenal. And you know what? And they needed all of those stops. They needed everything that the defense gave them. In that game on, you know, on Saturday night, but it's like, man, this defense is pretty good. And they're doing it without like, I mean, I would say like other than Benjamin Morrison, they're not doing it with a superstar really. And like, you know, quote unquote superstar in the front seven. Now granted, Howard Cross is playing like, you know, like a man possessed. But I don't know if I would necessarily, like, I don't know if anyone would call, I don't know, would you, after Saturday night, maybe you could label him a superstar, but like, they're not doing it with probably anybody in the front seven as of today that you would say has a chance to be a first round pick.
That's fair.
Right? Because like, Cross is playing great, but like, he's not going to be a first round pick. Like, even if he has like 3 more games like Saturday night where he's got 13 tackles, like, he just doesn't have the, you know, the size and everything that an NFL team is going to want in an interior defensive lineman. And that's not a knock on him. It's just like, he is getting the absolute maximum, you know, amount of production, I think out of his frame right now. And it's awesome to watch because he is just, it's like all technique with him. And it's great. Mike Golic Jr. Did you see Golic Jr.'s tweet And it just showed just like how much of a technician Cross is, and like he's phenomenal. But yeah, this defense is just, I mean, the defense is fun. I have so much more just watching games. It's like I have so much more faith in the defense right now to do something than I necessarily do the offense. Like, I can't tell you that I had a ton of faith when, you know, when Notre Dame got the ball back at the end that they were going to score based on everything that had happened. Which actually, one thing before actually going on to the defense that I thought was very telling, I don't know if it got talked about too much, but that I thought was very telling is where I think Marcus Freeman's faith and confidence in the offense is, because Freeman had two opportunities at the end of the first half to call timeouts to get the offense the ball back when Duke was driving, and he chose not to both times. And the first time I was like, whoa, because there was a lot of time left. And I was like, whoa, this is the exact opposite of what we saw from Freeman the first few weeks of the season, where he was calling, what was the one? Oh, I'm going to mix up the game. The one week he was calling timeouts with like 40 seconds left, which is not a whole lot of time, you know, just to get the offense the ball back. And he was not doing that on.
Yeah, I think that was Central Michigan, wasn't it?
Yeah, which I guess, I mean, Central Michigan, obviously, a little not, you know, not as good. Right. But let me see. I'm going to look it up. I got the play-by-play here. It was.
Was there an NC State as well? There was.
Yeah, it was back-to-back weeks.
NC State is the one. Because that was the one where it was like, that's a good defense. Now.
Yeah. So here we go. Second and seven. After a second and seven stop at the Duke 45, it was third and seven. There was 1:43 left on the clock on the second down play. The third down play gets snapped with 1:09. So what is that? That's 24 seconds. Right? Did I do my math right there? No, that's 34 seconds. Yeah, 34 seconds ran off the clock there. Like, if Freeman had a lot of because they had, if I'm not mistaken, they had two timeouts left at the time.
I think they actually might have had three.
So
I thought the same thing. I was like, right. Oh, it's interesting. And call a timeout.
Exactly. And then again, so that was the first time, because it's after the second and seven, I'm like, oh man, Freeman is just trying to get out of this half at this point with as little damage as possible. There was another time. Where was it? It was after the second and seven, maybe. Or third and five. There was another time where I remember just being like, whoa, he's had two opportunities. He chose not to both times. So it's telling. I don't know if he actually got asked that, but I thought that that was worth bringing up. So interested to hear you thought the same. Because it was like, I mean, we were all praising him a couple weeks back for that. It was like, man, Brian Kelly never did this. Brian Kelly played conservative in these cases. And it's like, oh, man.
I mean, it does. This actually does make sense from a, like, you're down.
Yeah.
Your guys.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, like, you're down. Like, when has Tobias ever run 2 minute from boundary?
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Or, like, it's just, like, you're down, people. Yeah. Let's not do that. So that kind of, that would make sense to me from just, like, down numbers.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the only thing that would make it, we'll see. We'll see if a similar situation presents itself this weekend and Notre Dame's back, which, what are your thoughts? I know I said, like, I'm skeptical we're going to see both Greathouse and Thomas back this weekend. What are your just kind of gut thought on, like, you know, whether or not both or either plays?
Well, I think the fact that they were both running before the game helps.
Yeah.
You know, they were out there doing stuff.
Yeah.
I think that is like Greathouse, they actually put on his uniform.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, you know, like, remember when Michael Mayer had that problem with his adductor or whatever, his groin against Cincinnati, suited up against Virginia Tech but didn't play. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he was fine the next week and then, you know, going forward. So it could be that. I mean, the fact that he suited up,
right,
I think it's big for Greathouse. And then Jaden Thomas, I don't know the exact nature of his injury or whatever.
Right. I have no knowledge of this. It's just like seeing it enough times and like seeing Thomas was in street clothes. Yeah. Greathouse dressed. I think we see Greathouse this weekend. I will be pleasantly surprised if Thomas plays this weekend. But okay. All right, let's talk defense a little bit, and then let's get into your questions because we have quite a few. What just in general, anything on the defense that stood out, to you, or like I said, worth mentioning outside of like red zone or just like how much of an animal Howard Cross was.
Marist was an absolute monster.
Yeah,
he played a huge role in this game. Huge role.
Mm-hmm.
Containing Leonard the way he did early. Xavier Watts is it's like in the pantheon of like great seasons at safety, you're talking like Kyle Hamilton in 2019, and then you had Harrison Smith in 2010. And then after that, it's kind of like, there's a Lohi in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's kind of approaching like, is it going to be like Watts in 2023 or Alohi in 2018? Like that's where he's at right now. Like that's where he's trending. Like he's having a huge, huge season so far. Only halfway there, so we'll see. But he looks really, really good.
Yes, that interception was beautiful.
Yeah,
and huge. Needed that. When they needed the turnovers, on Saturday night. They got him, which also, hey, we finally recovered a fumble.
Yeah.
Finally. It's the Notre Dame's bad luck in that department was like almost comical. It's like, what did they have to do, to actually get a fumble recovery? And then they finally got one. What was it? It was the 10th forced fumble, I think, by Notre Dame before they finally were able to have one go their way. And most of them were like, it wasn't like, bad plays by the defense where it's like, oh, they're trying to scoop and score and they're messing up. It was just like they would just keep causing fumbles that would go directly to an opposing player. So that was good to see. One player who I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen more of, and maybe get your thoughts on him, is Jason Onye. It seems like he flashes when he is in the game, but he's not getting a ton of snaps. He played 6 snaps on Saturday night. Against Duke, he recorded 0 snaps against Ohio State. I'm looking at his, Central Michigan, he only had 13, and that was a blowout. NC State, 18. I don't know. I feel like he gets on the field and I notice him, and it feels like I notice him enough when he's on the field that like I would not have guessed he only played 6 snaps on Saturday. And I would like to see him more, especially like, rotating in some of the interior linemen in, in these games.
Yeah, unfortunately for him, you are taking out Howard Cross.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
No. true. Because Cross 57 snaps. Onye 6. Who else? I'm trying to look at interior linemen. Rubio had 16. And that's really it for the interior linemen. I thought he has flashed in a positive way in very limited snaps, I think. So positive development there, for this defense as well. It was great to see Javonte Jean-Baptiste finally get a sack after getting so close all those times. So that was fun because he has what now? Let's see. Total of 14 pressures on the season and was finally able to, to get home. Anything else defensively kind of stand out for you? Because maybe we'll talk Louisville a little bit and then get into the questions.
Not really. I mean, I think that a lot of people were kind of concerned, like they gave up the late stuff. It's like the defense really needs to, like, if the opposition has 7 points with like 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, then like the backups need to be in because it's like 30-7, you know,
right?
Like they really need to not be in a situation where the game is like, they're going to start, they've given up one touchdown and again, and if the other team scores a touchdown in the fourth quarter, they're going to take the lead. Like that needs to not be the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're playing amazing. Like they're ninth in yards per play allowed this year. Some of their statistics are kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like they are, let's go look at their pass efficiency defense. It's like the top in the nation. Let me check this out real quick. Passing defense, rating. They are third in passing efficiency rating. They have 6 interceptions to 3 touchdowns. 5.4 yards per attempt allowed, which is 8th. I mean, listen, I know they have Navy or whatever, but
I mean, like they also
played Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I mean, you know, it's just it's impressive. I mean, there's no other way to see it. They're giving up 147 yards per game in through the air. In 2023.
Yeah.
You know, they're 4th in yards allowed per game. I mean, it's incredible. It truly is.
Yeah. I mean, the run defense ain't bad either. You know, they give the 7th in PFF team run defense rating. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's see. Yards per carry allowed, they are 45th, 3.4. So not as impressive, but not still, yet. Like, you're also giving up. You're also playing teams that are, you know, they've been down, right?
Yeah.
So you're giving up 137 yards a game or whatever it is, which is just nothing. 124 yards a game. So, I mean, they're playing great. They're playing amazing.
Hats off. Yes. Hats off Al Golden. Cause he, you know, took some heat last year. I mean, having the same defensive coordinator 2 years in a row can make a difference. Having some consistency since Notre Dame had what? They had 3 in 3 years. Yeah. Cause it was Lee and then it was Freeman for a year and then it was Golden. So, let's talk a little bit about Louisville. Because Louisville, undefeated, they are ranked. Notre Dame is, let's see, I forget what the spread was last I checked. It wasn't super high. And I've seen, again, you know, it's you get clicks and you get engagement when you pick against Notre Dame. But I've seen some college football experts say, you know, Louisville is going to win outright, which I was a little surprised with because I, in terms of like, how good of a team Louisville is. Like, I do not think they are, you know, nearly as good as Duke. I think Duke is a much better football team than Louisville. And Notre Dame just went into Duke, and I get they needed the late drive, but it's like they only needed the late drive because they shot themselves in the foot a number of times, you know, in that game and squandered opportunities. So what are your just high-level thoughts on, you know, on Louisville coming into this game?
I mean, Jamie, we'll do the preview show tomorrow on Hit and Hustle with Jamie, mm-hmm. Or today, whenever this comes out.
Yep.
I mean, they're fine, right? Like they're a big play team. They're not going to have long drives. They need to hit explosives. So like that's important to them. If Notre Dame doesn't give up the big play, they're straight up just going to win this game. Just period. Yeah. So, you know, they're second in the nation in 30 plus yard plays. They're first in the nation in 40 plus yard plays. So look, they want explosives, right? They want to go after it and they want to do that. And if they're not getting that, then they're not going to be successful. You know, they've got some really good wide receivers and especially, well, what's his name? Thrash, I believe it is.
Yes.
Which Jamari Thrash, 22 catches, 444 yards, averaging 20 yards a catch, 5 touchdowns. So look, I mean, he's a burner. You know, he's probably faster than anyone Notre Dame's played so far this year. Jawar Jordan is 7 catches for 159. He's a running back of theirs. So he's, you know, when they throw him the ball, he's done really well. He's also averaging, Jawar Jordan's averaging 7.7 yards per carry. So, you know, look, they'll hit you. But if you tackle them and you make them drive the field, you're going to get them off the field, right? They have a really good pass rusher who's getting after it, but they're not very good run defense, you know. So Ashton Gillette he has 5 sacks so far this year, 1 sack a game.
Mm-hmm.
He's good, you know. I mean, so they're fine, right? Like, I think that they are, you know, they're undefeated, but they also have played some like really squirrely games, right? So they beat NC State 13-10. They beat Indiana 21-14. They beat Georgia Tech 39-34 in a game where they were losing early, right? Georgia Tech just lost to Bowling Green. So, you know, it's they're fine. It's just like, if Notre Dame comes out and plays well, and Louisville isn't the type of team that should force them to play poorly, right? Like Ohio State and Duke, like, they can force bad play. Really good players, really well coached. I just don't think Louisville's on that level. Notre Dame would have to be sloppy, and in order to play poorly in this game, they should be fine. They should be fine. But you know, it's also college football.
So. Yeah, and I mean, I don't necessarily fear Jake Plummer at all, since
Notre Dame. Oh, you shouldn't.
Notre Dame has seen him.
To be clear.
Exactly. And it's like, I think he started off. I'm gonna load up his stats now. He started off the season, I think, looking a little bit better than maybe he had in the past. Like, yeah, like his, you know, he had 3 touchdowns, 1 interception against Georgia Tech, but like even against Murray State, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. Against Indiana, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Against Boston College, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, but I mean, that's BC. And then against NC State, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. It's like, yeah, these are fine numbers. Notre Dame has seen better quarterbacks this year, and has, you know, they held Ohio State's passing game in check. So I have faith that they're going to be able to do that against Louisville as well. And I don't know, maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but I am not overly concerned about this game. Maybe I should be. Obviously I should have been a little more concerned about the Duke game, but it's just like this Louisville team has the feel of one of those teams that, like, every year around this time, people are like, they're undefeated, they're ranked. And it's like, yeah, they've played nobody. And then you look back at the end of the season and you're like, oh man, remember when Louisville was ranked? Like, oh yeah. Yeah. Now they have like 4 losses or whatever it is. Like there's teams like that every year in the ACC. That's usually like Syracuse. It feels like. Like, I feel like Notre Dame has played Syracuse a number of times where Syracuse was, like, getting a lot of buzz. It's like, ah, they're undefeated. Notre Dame's on upset alert. And then Notre Dame comes in and is like, yeah, no, there's nothing for us to have worried about. And looking at Louisville's schedule, like, they got Notre Dame still. They have Duke. They have Miami. They have Kentucky, who's ranked 20th. And then it doesn't even account for Virginia and Virginia Tech. Both of those are at home, though. But anyway, like, this has the look of a team to me that is undefeated now that ends the year with like 4 losses at least. So I think I was surprised to hear, you know, national pundits say Notre Dame's on upset alert, especially if Notre Dame gets some receivers back this week. I'm not overly concerned about this one.
I mean, I predicted in the preseason Notre Dame would lose this game, not because of anything Louisville. Just this is the trap game.
Yeah.
It's the trappiest trap game. It's like it was always going to be Ohio State, Duke is good, Louisville, then USC, right? Like, it's so trappy. It's so trappy.
But at the same time, it's like Notre Dame played poorly enough last week that I think, like, I don't know, I think that helps here. Like, it being a close, hard-fought game, like, coming down to the end and, like, not playing well in winning – I think helps this be less trappy in just looking at it. Like, if Notre Dame would have come out and beat Duke by, like, you know, 2 or more touchdowns, like they could have won that game by 2 or more touchdowns. They probably should have. But like, I think if that would have happened, a lot easier to overlook, you know, Louisville. And I know Freeman was smart. Like, hey, my team's playing its 7th straight undefeated team. It's like, okay, Marcus, Of course, you're playing an undefeated team in week one or week zero. Nobody's played anybody yet. And that, you know, playing somebody undefeated in week two or three is not necessarily, you know, any indication that you're playing a tough team. But I get it, what he was doing. And he's also trying to, you know, make sure his team sees that. So I don't know. I guess I didn't look at it near as much of a trap game. I think, I don't know. I'm not that worried about this game. Maybe, again, famous last words, and on Saturday night I'll melt down. But I am not that much. So are you thinking, and I know you're going to do your official prediction, are you thinking this is a close one then?
I don't know. I want to listen to – I'll make my prediction tomorrow on the show. I want to listen to Marcus Freeman talk about the wideouts.
Okay.
I want to listen and talk about the wideouts.
All right.
Before I decide.
All right. Well, tune in to that Hit and Hustle show tomorrow to get Greg's official prediction. All right. Let's see where we're at. We're right under an hour here. All right. So let's dive into questions. And we'll put a bow on this one. First question here from our friend Chris Jenkins. How many times do you keep running it up the middle when it's clearly not working? Obviously, the answer is a lot. If you were Notre Dame on Saturday night, looking at the rush breakdown, let's see. So technically, Notre Dame's average running up the middle got skewed a little bit by the late 30-yard run. So I'm looking at the stats here. I mean, I guess what would you consider? Here we go. Middle left and middle right. I mean, I guess if looking at PFF, we could probably include ones over the guard as well. If you want to call that up the middle, but like straight up the middle. Let's see. Middle left was 5 attempts, 15 yards. Middle right, 5 attempts, 42 yards. But that includes the 30, you know, the 30 yarder. So not outside of that one run. You're looking at what, 9 attempts for 27 yards. So just under exactly 3 yards per carry running right up the middle, which isn't great. Running behind left guard, 3 attempts, 15 yards. Running behind right guard, 5 attempts, 12 yards. Not a whole lot of success there outside of the one long run.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Just like not enough variety. Not enough, like against Ohio State, Notre Dame ran a jet with Jaden Greathouse. They didn't do that with Chris Tyree, which you think you could, right?
Yeah.
You think you could do that.
Yeah. I think they underestimated Duke's D-line.
Run it with any of them.
Yeah. Really? I think they just underestimated Duke's D-line. I think they thought they were just going to be able to come out and run at him. And then when they couldn't, they were like, uh-oh, we don't have a lot of receiver. We didn't put a whole lot in the package because we thought we were going to be able to run. That's kind of how it felt watching this unfold. Yeah. So next question from Chris is, how classy is Hartman? That's how it should be. So obviously mentioning, Sam Hartman going over, and not only going over to check on, Leonard Riley, but Riley Leonard, wanting to cut his post-game interview short to make sure he can go over and check on the opposing quarterback. I don't ever remember seeing something like that happen. I mean, granted, it's kind of a unique situation where the opposing quarterback gets hurt right at the end of the game and is still in the tent. But I mean, obviously, what else can you say about it? That's his time in the spotlight, and he passed it up to go check on on his opponent. So obviously, pretty awesome gesture, and just great to see.
Cool thing to do.
Yeah. And it is, you are correct, Chris. That is how it should be. Sadly, it's not. The quarterback coming into town next weekend probably would not have done that. Since he likes to, write things about his opponents on his fingernails as opposed to, showing them some respect. But we'll talk about that plenty next week. And I know Greg will probably talk about that even more on his other podcast too, the Untitled Notre Dame and USC podcast with his buddy Michael. But we'll get to that next week. Last question from Chris is, do you think there was a little bit of an Ohio State hangover? You know what? I don't think there was necessarily, because it's like they came out and made some plays early. And usually if there's a hangover, it's in the beginning. And it's just like, oh, man, this team is sleepwalking. And it wasn't that. I think it was just bad execution. Just like I said, it was a pretty limited game plan offensively that required, you know, like almost near perfection. And anytime you're doing that, like, obviously your margin for error is quite small. So that's my take. I don't know. You think it was hangover from Ohio State?
I don't know how to quantify this stuff. They started the game. Okay. I just think it's hard to play peak performance twice in a row. Right. And so really like what you're talking about is just like, hey man, like you geared up to play your best football game. And now it's like the next game is just kind of naturally going to be not as crisp and not as good, you know? So in that sense, yeah, you know, and that's kind of natural in terms of just like, that's human nature. And what you need is kind of like individuals to make plays, right? So, hitting the post to Tobias, something like that, or
one-handed catches from Mitchell Evans.
Yeah, like stuff like that, right? Where it just, you need things to happen, you know, and if they don't, and the plays don't work out in the margins, you just kind of like, and plus like then you're getting a bunch of false starts and that weirdness, you know, and all that stuff. Like it's just, so I don't know, like people talk about hangovers and whatnot. It's just like, it's hard to play peak performance twice in a row.
Yeah.
Basically is what I'm saying there.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Next question here is from our buddy Oscar at Vamos Irish. Does Hartman need to change his clap for the next game? So obviously, in reference to the false starts and all of the procedure penalties that happened in the beginning, it seems like they, you know, by the end, they got it a little bit cleaner. But yeah, obviously, those were just things that can't happen, especially the lining up, you know, offsides and lining up incorrectly, especially when it's coming from senior players or veterans. It just can't happen. The clap, you know, specifically, I think if I'm not mistaken, Parker yesterday said like, you know what, we did when we went back, we did notice something. I'm not going to tell you guys what it is. It's more, you know, something that we are going to adjust. So it sounds like, you know, they did identify something that was causing the issue last week that didn't exist other weeks. Cause you know, NC State, at least in the beginning, that game was, you know, moderately loud. Prior to the rainstorm coming in and people clearing out, and then it got loud again towards the end. So like, wasn't a problem then. So something, you know, Duke was keying on something, or, you know, something was happening, and it sounds like Notre Dame's at least addressing it.
It's these things are so weird to me. Like, I mean, Brian Kelly went through this.
Yeah.
It's like, what did you do in other games?
Yeah.
Like, you played at Ohio State last year.
Yeah.
What'd you do then? What'd you do? Like, you did the thing with the hand. Like, what'd you do against USC?
Yeah.
Played on the road last year.
Yeah.
You know? I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Hopefully we don't see it again.
Yeah. But now it's like, I figured something out. We got something going on. It's like, all right, I guess. I don't know. Maybe
he could just be saying that too, to be like,
he could just be saying that.
Right? Because otherwise, what else is he going to say? Like, I have no idea what happened, guys. Like, I'm just going to hope and pray that that doesn't happen again. I mean, we'll see. But obviously something in that, in that battery of sorts there needs to change. It had to be something, because it's like, It was your fifth year senior center. Like, something was happening. Like that was causing it. That it seemed weird. Like, I get it if it's like a young center, but something was up. Hopefully it's fixed. And he says, can this defense keep up its assertiveness? I think so, because if anything, it's like, I think this defense still has another level that it could reach. Because we've already talked about like the 10 fumbles forced, only one recovered because of some bad luck and bad bounces. Like, yeah, that bad luck can continue, you know, all season long, or it could, you know, you could start to get towards, to start to come back toward the mean. But so I think that is possible. And I also think that, Notre Dame has been getting great pressure, you know, all season and just not getting home. So I think that's another area that we could see this defense improve yet is you get home a couple more times a game. Like, hey, then this defense goes to another level. What do you think?
Yeah.
All right. So yes is the answer there, Oscar. It can keep it up and it can get better. So especially some of the offenses, I mean, outside of USC, it's like some of the offenses coming up are also not the greatest. So it could just naturally look better in some of these cases.
I mean, I think you just become more and more cohesive, you know, yeah, and working together and that sort of thing. Right. So it's not that they get better, but like, you know, like, look in this game, right? Like Jordan Bataho is going to sit out because he got the targeting.
Yeah.
Well, if Josh Burnham comes in and lights the world on fire, well, now you've got some kind of pass rushing situation, you know, and that can really elevate the defense, like going into USC and that sort of thing. So, Christian Gray could get a bigger role, you know, so all that stuff's in play.
All right, last question from Oscar is the hot brown the best or worst way to eat turkey? I had to look this up. And for those of you listening, if you don't know what this is, a hot brown sandwich, sometimes known as a Louisville hot brown or Kentucky hot brown, is an American hot sandwich originally created at the Brown Hotel in Louisville, Kentucky, by Fred K. Schmidt in 1926. It is a variation of traditional Welsh rarebit and was one of two signature sandwiches created by chefs at the Brown Hotel shortly after its founding in 1923. The hot brown is an open-faced sandwich of turkey breast, ham, and bacon covered in creamy Mornay sauce and baked or broiled until the bread is crisp and the sauce begins to brown. Cheddar cheese or American cheese may be added for the sauce. I have never had one of these, but I want one now. I don't know about you.
Yeah, the ingredients sound amazing.
I'm in on trying it. It looks great. I definitely, without even trying it, I'm going to say it can't be the worst, Oscar. I don't know if it's the best, but I don't think it could be the worst based off of that description.
Yeah, I mean, it's Here's the thing. It's not a sandwich.
Ooh. Okay,
these open face sandwiches, please, they're not sandwiches.
Okay,
they're not a sandwich you hold in your hand.
All right, that's a fair take. Because these, yeah, you definitely would need to eat that with a fork and knife. So, all right, fair take on that. I still want to try one. Now I'm starving. So. Thank you for that question, Oscar. I'm going to eat a lot more at dinner than I maybe would have otherwise, because now I just am very hungry. All right, we got a few more questions. Next up, Robert Helicki. Fellas, long 2 weeks, too many high noons. Is head coach Marcus Freeman in over his head, and are we doomed, or is it time to just relax and enjoy the season? Weekends on edge is not aging me well. We are halfway through the regular season, and I do not feel relaxed at all. Thanks, guys. Fair questions. I want to say I don't think Freeman is in over his head. I think the jury might still be out as to, you know, whether or not Freeman is the guy that ultimately gets Notre Dame, you know, back on top. But like, yeah, there are mistakes that are made that are being made. There, you know, he makes mistakes that first time head coaches make. Tends to learn from them. Tends to be accountable for them, and at least seems like, you know, corrects them when they, you know, when they happen. So I don't think he is in over his head, but I get the question of like, you know, it's not aging any of us well. But I mean, if you think back, Brian Kelly was a head coach for 97 years or however many years he reminded us, you know, every week, I'm doing this forever, right? And it's like, we had games like Duke under Brian Kelly in his like ninth year at Notre Dame, right? He almost lost to Toledo towards the end of his tenure. And it's like, so, you know, we're not necessarily seeing that, you know, we're seeing maybe a little bit more your frequency with Freeman and, you know, Kelly, for as bad as sometimes, you know, like some of like, the, again, almost losing to Ball State, almost losing to Toledo. He got really good at it just being almost and not actually being losses in those scenarios. And like, you know, the win loss total looked great over those final few years. But like there was a lot of tense moments under, you know, when he was a head coach against teams that were not necessarily great. He just, again, he had the experience, you know, to guide Notre Dame to win some of those. But it's not like, you know, Brian, when Kelly left, like I said, his win-loss total was impressive over the last few years, but it wasn't like he was just blowing teams out every week. There was a lot of close games then. So it almost is a continuation right so far. And I think the question that is still out is, can Freeman turn that into – can he improve on it?
Yeah, I don't – coaches are dumb. They do dumb things. You know, Brian Kelly didn't have the snap count down at Georgia, you know, like the silent count. They didn't know what it was going to Georgia. Last year they lost the game because they couldn't figure out the operation on field goals and extra points. You know, they didn't send someone out there, and then they sent someone out there, but then they didn't block a certain guy, right? Like they just couldn't figure it out, and that's why they lost to Florida State early in the year. Which isn't to say, like, what the mistakes that Marcus Freeman makes are okay, but you're just going to get them with everybody. Everyone's going to have these. So it's just, you know, you don't want it, right? I don't want him to try to attempt a 54-yard field goal on 4th and 3 from the 37. I don't want that. I'd like him to go for it, you know. But coaches, they do these things, and they're all gonna do it. So,
all right. Next question we got here is from @JohnFitter, Mitch Evans. WTF? How well is he playing? And then says, is there any play that Notre Dame can call on offense to give Tobias some high percentage catches to get him in a groove? I mean, first, Mitch Evans. Good on you, man. You know, everybody was talking about how much of a drop off there would be from Michael Mayer, and all Evans has done is now go back to back weeks being Notre Dame's best in some cases only, you know, receiving threat, and has done some things now that Mayer never did. So, I mean, although also, man, can you imagine if Mayer had Hartman to throw to him last year? Whew. Anyway, but no, I mean, Evans is playing, you know, phenomenal. He's doing a, you know, a hell of a job. All right. Tobias, though, I think this is one where you could probably give us some good thoughts here, Greg. Is do you think, like, obviously they feel somewhat comfortable occasionally calling the deep shot to him, but what else can they do to get him some higher percentage ones to get him some confidence? Because I think that's at this point, I think you got to build up his confidence.
Okay. He's dropped 2 balls this year. One was on a wide receiver screen, which you would call to build someone's confidence.
Correct.
And another was on a shallow crosser, which you would call to build someone's confidence.
Yeah.
So I think for Tobias, the problem is that the coaches aren't obligated to build up anyone's confidence.
Right.
At some point, you know, like at some point, hey, we need to be able to run our stuff, and that's just it. You got to make the plays that are available to be made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't make them in this game. Okay. Now, I've been a very pro Tobias guy.
Mm-hmm.
I did not think he would ever play a game like that, to be honest. I did not think that would happen.
Yeah.
I think it's correct that he's struggling with confidence. And I said on Hit and Hustle, I think that they need to give him less, right? And it's just kind of like, it's not so much, just like let him know, like, hey, man, like whatever opportunities you get, just make the most of them. Don't worry about the outcome of the game. Because sometimes I think that players like him, right? He had to start on the boundary. and because other people were hurt and they don't have any other boundaries, which isn't his fault, by the way. But he had to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for him, it's just like, hey, that's a lot. And we can tell it's a lot because he played like it was a lot, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think for them, it's like, hey, man, we're going to lessen your snaps. Okay. We're going to give you less. It's going to sound like a demotion, but really what we're doing is we just want to make sure that when you're out there, you're making the most of all that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ball comes to you, you know, catch it. Because he's playing without confidence. He's done enough in games to where he should be confident.
Right.
So just based on what he's done this year, based on the one catch he had last year against Stanford, like no receiver has cooked a defensive back like that.
Nope.
So like, hey, man, you're good. We've seen you be good, right? So we don't want you to lack confidence. You should be confident because you're playing well. Okay, and when we've thrown you the ball, you've done well with it. Okay, so go out there and believe in yourself. It seems like last week was too much for you, so we're gonna dial back, and that's fine, right? We're not giving up. We're just dialing back a little bit. Okay, we're gonna give you a little bit less to worry about. Okay, so just go out there and make plays. Okay, we don't need to give you something easy. We don't need to do that stuff. We're ready to throw you a crosser. Just like we did against NC State, and you'll catch it, and you'll run for 45 yards. You know, we're ready to throw you a goal ball. You were open in this game. It was just a little bit too far. Okay, we're ready to do that again. Okay, but we're just going to give you less. And here's the thing with Tobias is, like, it's not his fault that he was the only wide receiver in his class.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about if and I said this on the Hit and Hustle pod as well, like, think about if Braylon James was the only wide receiver in this incoming class right now. Where he is in his development would be a much bigger story, But it doesn't matter because Great House and Flores are in his class, and they're ready, and he's not.
Right.
Okay? And so no one cares. Right? No one's like, well, Braylon James is like, they need him to be ready. Right? Like, no, going into next year, no one's ever going to be like, Braylon James is the key to the Notre Dame season.
Right. All right.
How many times do people say that?
A lot.
About Tobias this year. A lot. So many. Right? And it's just like, hey, if he's not ready, he's not ready. So, and I thought, and to be honest, you know, hand up, I thought that he would be more ready than he has been.
I did too. I think I lied.
So hand up on that, right? Like that's mea culpa.
Yeah.
But we do have to understand, like, hey, man, just because it was needed doesn't mean that he was ready. And so he's showing us he's not. Just dial him back a little bit. Don't give him, you know, don't give him 40 snaps. Give him 20 snaps. You know, give him what you've been giving Flores in Great House. Give him those snaps. But still throw him the ball. Don't be afraid to throw him the ball. So it's my Tobias.
I like it. Put it in play. Put it in play, Parker. All right. We have a bunch of questions that are all kind of similar. We kind of covered. So we're going to read them and try to combine into one for sake of some timing here, too. So Chris Scheiber says, you know, I can forgive the lack of passing game ingenuity with only three varsity receivers, but explain to me why with five running backs they have played all year, the Irish run game was slow power over and over and over and over. Cam S. Pumpkins, the fact that Parker kept running the same plays over and over, inside run with Estime, does that tell you that maybe he thought the play design was good, but the execution was bad, so they just needed to keep trying it? Drew Brennan, how could Parker have a pretty dynamic running game against Ohio State, but literally run the same inside play over and over against Duke? Why did we not try to get the ball outside with guys like Price and Love? And I think, okay, yeah, those were all of the ones. I mean, there's like three questions, all about the run game, you know, which we covered, you know, quite a bit. So I think we covered off on most of that. But thank you all for your questions. I think the one thing, and I think it was Drew brought it up, was were you surprised we didn't see more things to the outside with Price and Love? Because Jeremiah Love, man, he is going to be something. He's already very good. But, I mean, he is going to be. He's going to be a problem for some defenses, you know, for the next couple of years.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, we've kind of talked about it.
Yeah. So hopefully we see more of him, you know, this weekend if Louisville, you know, somehow bottles up the run as well as Duke. I don't think they will, but I mean, yeah, Love, 5 attempts, 44 yards for an 8.8 yard per carry. Granted, 34 of those came on the fake punt, but still, Love has been pretty great, you know, so far this season. Clancy, the Notre Dame Leprechaun, asks us, did Zeke, Zeke Correll have – or kind of have a tough day against Duke? Is he playing hurt? I don't know that he's playing hurt. I mean, I think we've covered it a little bit already, you know, just in terms of something was up with the operation. It's not something we've seen him do, you know, a lot in the past. So hopefully, I don't know, hopefully it was just something Duke was doing that was causing him, to mess up his snap. I don't know. But, you know, hopefully it was just something like that and they could, you know, they could figure it out. But, it also says, can we talk about big Mitch Evans? What a baller. Yes. Hot take. We've got a seamless transition from Mayer. Maybe I don't know about seamless yet, but yeah, I mean, obviously he has been great. And then just says the bounce back from the tough loss was incredible. Very good job by Freeman and crew. I think that's an interesting point. I think overall that's fair. You know, that it was a good job getting him to bounce back. But I think there were definitely some things in that game that you look to the coaching staff and say, like, I hope you guys get better at some of these things, you know, moving forward.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what we got here left. Thoughts on – this is from at Golden Domer 28. Says, thoughts on the Parker experiment. I don't see a national title offensive coordinator. Andy is not a place to learn on the job. And it says Freeman doesn't count. But what are your thoughts? I mean, we're six games in. I think we've seen some good, and then we've seen some things that were like, well, where'd that go? Right? You mentioned it, like the play action we saw against NC State. That was great. Where'd that go? Right? Where'd the deep shots go that we saw? I mean, I guess they did call the one, it didn't hit, but, and the other two, you know, to Flores, but it's like, I think we've seen signs, definitely. I haven't seen enough from Parker for me to say definitively. Now that we're not in the heat of the moment, I know I had fired off some fun tweets during the game, but I don't think I've seen enough in either direction for me to have a definitive opinion yet. I think I've seen some good. I've seen some bad. I think we need to see some more and to see how this plays out. Like if he can't, you know, even if there's some injuries still against USC, like if he can't devise something that scores points on USC's defense, then I might have some questions because that thing just looks bad.
Yeah. I mean, the first four games were good. The last two games weren't.
Right.
You can't say either way, you know,
exactly.
I don't want to jump to conclusions. I mean, Al Golden's defense wasn't the bee's knees last year.
Nope.
And now they're top 10.
Yeah. So you that's know? Also, it's yeah, just, growing pains going from Tommy Rees to.
Yeah. It's just, it is what it is, you know, like you got to wait a little bit. Let's see how it plays out. You know, but what we can ask, this is a better question to ask after, you know, like in December. You
yes.
Know?
Yes. We will revisit. Oh, I'm sure we will revisit it then. But yeah, I think that's a fair take. At Drew Payment says, if Notre Dame doesn't have the wide receivers against Louisville, what would you do as OC differently than what we saw at Duke? I think we, like, by answering other questions, have probably, like, answered part of this already, but like, you know, obviously I think we would probably do things like the jet sweeps to Tyree that you saw. Well, you saw the jet sweep, like you said, to, you know, to Greathouse against Ohio State. And you'd see, you know, more things like that. I would say more motion, try to scheme guys open. Don't just, you know, run the same kind of passing concepts over and over, right, and hope that they're going to work. I think if you don't have the wide receivers, and look, the Notre Dame coaching staff knows right now pretty well. They knew on Monday, you know, already, like whether, like what percentage it was that they'd have Greathouse and Thomas. We don't know that because they shouldn't tell us, because Louisville doesn't need to know it. So they know, they have all week, you know, with that information. If they thought on Monday of this week, we might not have Thomas, we might not have Greathouse, like they absolutely have to do something different. And they got to be more creative in terms of what they're doing. Because they can't just count on, you know, coming out and just running the ball and just saying like, we're going to be bigger and tougher and we're just going to run it at them. Like yes, that would be a perfect world scenario, but like, no, you gotta be a little more creative this week if you don't have them.
Yeah.
Question here from Woj to God at Woj to God says, offensive and defensive players that need a big second half. Fun question. I think we would both, well, I would say Tobias on offense based on his start. Who would you say?
I think that's right.
Yeah. I think 2-3 weeks ago, I probably would have said Spindler, but he's playing better and better each week. So he's already, I think, trending up. Because he had a little bit of a rough start, you know, in his first starting experience, but now he's playing better. So I would say, yeah, Tobias. What about defensive?
I mean, Bataljo was one. I mean, he's been a pretty big disappointment, to be honest.
I think that's the answer. Because, I mean, yeah, I'd like to see maybe a little more out of Mills, but, like, he's doing a lot of dirty work and actually, you know, he's grading out well each week. He had 7 tackles last week. So, I mean, he's playing, you know, he's doing some of the little things. You know, maybe you could say Jean Baptiste, you want to see more of him getting home. But, I mean, again, he's getting the pressure. He's just not getting home. Marist, I think you could say, like, you want to see more consistency because it's like it kind of feels like with Leofau that, like, he's either on or off. It's like there doesn't seem to be a big in middle ground in his games. It's like we're either talking about him at the end of the game, like, man, he was flying all over the field, playing with his hair on fire, or we're talking like, man, he did not have a good game. And I don't feel like he's got – so maybe more consistency out of Leofau would be good to see. But I think, yeah, I think you're right on Patello. Like, he has been – which we'll get to. There's a question about the refs we haven't talked about yet. We'll get to that in a second. But, yeah, he has not been a factor. Just hasn't been.
Yeah.
Jedi for Life at Irish Buffalo asked a question that you already kind of answered to a different question. But we'll read it. It just says, how do you balance not giving up on a guy as talented as Tobias and the fact that you simply need him with holding him accountable for poor play? Does it send the wrong message to the team if he starts and plays a lot next week? Great question. I think you answered it like perfectly kind of already of, you know, how do we build his confidence with your, you know, thought process of maybe giving him less snaps, but still, you know, letting him know that they have faith in him. All right. Well, Power Draw Lefty says, why can we not have explosive plays against good teams? I wish I knew. But Notre Dame still had, I mean, Notre Dame got more explosive plays against Duke than Duke had given up all year in aggregate. So, I mean, they were playing a pretty good defense too.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing it undermanned. But I get the sentiment of the question. Here's one on refs from Dan Free 5. Two things, and Greg seems like he wants to shy away from it. But this past weekend was so egregious he couldn't help himself. The refs talk. Every week it's the same and it's not going to change. We got to stop talking about it. Every fan base thinks they stink, not unique to Notre Dame. The refs were horrific this week, though. Like, I fully support talking about how bad they were this week because they didn't make judgment errors. They made egregious, just like, procedural errors. They reviewed a play that's not reviewable. How does that happen? Like, the replay booth is supposed to know what they can review. It's like that is not like griping about a holding call or griping about a pass interference. Although Notre Dame, if there was a stat for flags picked up, would lead the country in you know, in that stat, because every week it seems a flag gets thrown for something that looks obvious that then they pick up and go, no, you know, Tobias Merriweather, you know, that catch was on, that ball was uncatchable because the defensive back was running through him, for God's sakes. So anyway, but this week was just, it was awful. You know, I think the one you pointed out on Twitter where, Leonard runs out of bounds. I think it was like, I can't remember if he said it was the 28 or the 38.
The 28.
And then not only did they stop to move the ball forward, they moved it forward by like 2 yards.
So
that's bad.
So they missed this. So he ran out. He got forced out at the 28.
Yeah.
They spotted the ball at the 27. And then they stopped the game. Oh, no. Yeah, no, sorry. He was forced out on the 28. They moved the ball, or they spotted the ball on the 29. Then they stopped the game to move it another yard forward to the 30. Which, that's crazy. So you missed the spot by 2 yards. That in itself is insane. Okay. That can never happen. You miss the spot by 2 yards. But these things are reviewable. And no one calls in and is like, whoa. Like, that's, you got to move it back. Because it goes from 3rd and 7 to 3rd and 5. Like, football is played on the margins. Okay.
Big difference.
Like, and it's not like it's a big deal. But here's the thing. Here's the thing, Frank. Okay.
No. Yeah. Wait, let's go.
Here's the thing is that, so Notre Dame last week, right? They have 10 on the field. Well, now everyone's looking at other plays. Like, oh, there's a play against Tennessee State where they had 10 on the field. It's like a whole problem, right? So everyone's bringing this up from like a month ago. Well, you know what, man? When your replay incompetence replays something that you shouldn't, then guess what? I'm going to look at everything else under a bigger lens then, because that's ridiculous. Okay. So you miss the spot by 2 yards. You don't look at that. Okay. Then you interject yourself up in the booth on replay when you're not supposed to. And then you don't have a conclusive view of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I think it went over the pot. Well, either it did, like, either you know or you don't. Okay? Yep. You don't know for a fact. So not only are you interjecting yourself and when you shouldn't, but then you're also not even getting it right in that sense. Then you're going to inject yourself when for targeting. You're going to eject a player for a hit on someone's hip.
That was, yeah.
That, like, that is, so you sit out the spot. You raise your hand when you shouldn't raise your hand on the other one. And now you're raising your hand on a play that nobody cares about and that no one notices. No one sees this. And so, you know what? I'm going to put my hand up and I'm going to kick this player out of this game.
Yep.
It is a complete disgrace. And yep, there's no other way to say it. It's a disgrace. And like, the apology needs to be public. They owe the public an explanation. Yep. Because you have an entire fan base who is looking at the trend of games that Notre Dame plays against ACC opponents. This is an integrity of the game issue at this point.
Woo.
It just 100% is. They need to publicly say, we messed this up. We cost Notre Dame yards. We cost Notre Dame yards on the review that we shouldn't have looked at. We're costing Notre Dame yards on this situation where the ball was moved 2 yards ahead. We didn't look at it. And we apologize. These people in the booth have been suspended. And they will not do games. They will not do Notre Dame games going forward. It's a disgrace. Truly.
Woo!
And everyone is like on me on Twitter, like, well, I shouldn't say everyone. Most people understand. But other people are on me on the Twitter machine, these Duke fans, it's like, move on. It's like, you know what, Duke guy? You've paid attention to Notre Dame football for 10 minutes. I've been covering Notre Dame football, like covering them, since like 2017. Okay? I've seen every single game of theirs since I was like 9 years old, okay?
Mm-hmm. Preach.
Like, there's levels to this. Don't tell me, Duke guy, be like, oh, you won the game. It's like, I'm sorry. Notre Dame won the game, yeah? Did I criticize the coaches after the fact? Did I give them grief? Yes, I did. Do I give players grief after wins? Yes, I do. So guess what? After wins, if the refs pull this crap, then guess what? They're going to get grief from me. And I'm sorry if you don't like my tweets. There's a good way to not see my tweets. It's called the block button. Or you don't follow me. So don't follow me. Don't follow my tweets. I'll tweet out what I want. And none of those tweets telling me, oh, you shouldn't tweet that. Well, are you disagreeing with what I'm saying, or you just don't want me to talk about it? So they need to apologize publicly. It's a disgrace to the game. It's embarrassing. And it's been happening for years with the ACC. So it needs to be addressed publicly. And that's where it's at. It's going to happen again this weekend. I'm certain of it. I am certain of it.
Also, I think I have to apologize to all of our listeners. It is on me. I should have started with that question because we would have had Fiery Greg for the whole damn podcast instead of right at the end. I should have known. That's on me. I'm gonna own that one. That's my own end of game mistake. For me for this week. But that was, I can't add anything to that because it was perfect. So I'm not even going to. Not even going to attempt to. Like I said, I apologize to all of you for not starting with that question. That's on me. Last one that we got, and then I do have to run and wrap this up. But it's from our buddy Brian Young. Says, after the roller coaster of the last 2 weeks, how confident are you Freeman can get the coaching errors in check? I'm trying to be optimistic, but I was getting serious Davey vibes on Saturday. I've been all in on head coach Marcus Freeman. I see him as a better leader that can adjust. I think we covered it a little bit already, but I think the difference, at least that I'm seeing with Davey and Freeman, was much more accountability. Freeman, like I said, much better accountability, and Freeman learning from some of these mistakes. We'll see if some of them come back, but I am not getting Bob Davey vibes just yet.
No.
All right.
I mean, first of all, like in his first season, Bob Davey went like 5-7. Like they were 1-4 at one point.
Yeah, it was not good.
I mean,
he turned it around. They did lose in the bowl game. They got bowl eligible, so they had to have a winning record.
Freeman's like 5-1. I mean,
yeah,
it's not like Bob Davey. Again,
no,
this happens to a lots.
Yep.
Lots of coaches go through this stuff. It's fine.
All right. And the last one was not, it was kind of a question. I'm going to read it just because we read the questions, even though it's trolling me. Juan Carlos Tefel, when I said that we will be updating, that we will be recording on Wednesday instead of Monday, said before or after the Phillies loss. Well, I guess I could say after the first Phillies win, because the Phillies won game one, Juan. They won it 4-1, thanks to Zach Wheeler and some timely hitting. So we will see what happens tonight in game two, but I will be posting this hopefully during the game, unless it's super close, and then you guys will see this Thursday morning because I will be an emotional wreck during a playoff baseball game. So with that said, I think we're going to put a bow on this one. Hopefully next week we're talking about a little bit easier victory, but we will see. And then we're going to get to talk USC, which I know Greg loves to talk about USC, given he is surrounded by the enemy 24/7. So, all right, Greg, I think we'll call this one. No new reviews to read this week, but as always, we thank you all for your questions. We thank you for listening, and as always, go Irish.